some people aren't really paying attention, according to the reports that we see about COVID these days. And joining us right now from the Center for Infectious Disease Research and Policy, the director of that department, Dr. Michael Osterholm, no stranger to this program, epidemiologist, knowing about all things COVID. Good morning. Do you think there is...
Good morning to you, Freddie.
How are you?
Good, thanks. Good to be with you again. Thanks for having me.
It's our pleasure. Is there an indifferent ear these days to COVID in the United States?
Well, you know, I think we've all been trying to wrestle with the issue of risk. What does it mean? You know, we get in automobiles every day, and, you know, 46,000 people in this country die in automobile accidents each year. You know, things happen in our lives, but we move ahead and we conduct our everyday lives as if, you know, tomorrow's going to be here and we're going to enjoy it. I think the same thing is happening with COVID. You know, we've gone through a horrible period in the last 4 years with over, you know, 1.3 million deaths in this country. And we're trying to adjust to say, okay, how do we live with this? Well, first of all, we know that COVID as a serious illness, and one requiring hospitalization, and unfortunately even the potential for death, is really much higher in those who are 65 years of age and older or have underlying immune conditions. You know, for many people today, the risk of COVID acquiring it as an infection and becoming seriously ill is very, very low, even lower than, for example, an automobile accident in younger age groups. And so, you know, we're adjusting to this. What does it mean now? And I think it's not the same for everyone. If you are still older, you need to be vaccinated again with the most recent dose. If you have a public event you're going to, you still may want to wear your N95 respirator. And I think in that sense, some people still really are concerned about it. But for many, we've moved on, and I think that's good news. Right now, we're at the lowest hospitalization rates. The number of deaths have come way down. We're really approaching the lowest number of cases anytime since the pandemic began. So that to me is good news.
Good news for America. So I guess that doesn't have a real big impact on the pharmaceutical shortage that we're seeing. How is that impacting the medicines like Paxlovid that are used to fight COVID?
Well, fortunately, we have enough Paxlovid. And let me just add, there's been some new research that's come out in the past several weeks that I think is very helpful in understanding the use of Paxlovid. It is a drug that if you are someone who is at high risk for serious illness, namely older populations, again, the immune compromised, underlying health conditions, there are the risk of actually having a serious outcome are much, much higher than for the rest of the population, as we just talked about. Well, it's been shown that Paxlovid can reduce that incidence of serious illness by over 70-80% if you take it promptly with the onset of your infection. Now, for the younger populations, those who are younger, who don't have underlying health conditions, where the risk of serious illness is already very, very low now, it's been shown that Paxlovid probably has only limited impact at all. And so this is why we want to concentrate making certain that we get Paxlovid to those people who would be more likely to have serious illness. And so that's what we're really concentrating on today. But in short, there's plenty of drug available, and it's just we got to get it to the right people at the right time.
There's also more good news on the COVID front. Is it really true that there is evidence showing that there is no evidence supporting that COVID has any impact on childhood asthma or to cardiac deaths among young people?
Yeah, there's absolutely no evidence that that has played a role like that, you know, in any kind of significant way. And now in particular, you know, we did see myocarditis occur, an inflammation of the heart with actual COVID back in the days when we saw many more serious illness in kids. This is 2021, 2022, but today it's extremely rare, and there's clearly no risk associated, increased risk, I should say, associated with the vaccine. So meaning that if you are vaccinated, it doesn't mean that you're more likely to get some kind of a heart condition following the vaccination.
I want to shift away from COVID in a second, but I do want to ask you about on-time vaccinations in children linked to income. And that's especially important to folks in our listening audience. How do we bridge that gap with the vaccinations, not only with COVID, but with all childhood vaccinations in incomes that don't have a lot of money?
Well, you know, Freddie, this is one of those ones where I wish we had many more people in our community like you. People who have a voice, people who are listened to, people who are trusted. And I think that one of the challenges we have today is that we've watched the challenge of vaccinated kids go from one where it was largely around safety. Parents were concerned, are these vaccines safe? And what we found with COVID was when vaccines were, in a sense, perceived to be forced on people, that they had to take them, they basically resisted and said, no, don't tell me what to do. And we found that over the past year, more and more people have refused to have their children vaccinated, have even refused to have their dogs and cats vaccinated against rabies because they don't want to be told what to do. Mm. And we have to recognize that in public health, that this is a formidable barrier, and that in some ways it's by our own making, because we didn't listen enough and try to help the public understand why these vaccines are so important and that it's in their best interest. And so I think at this point it really is a challenge for us to help them realize nobody's trying to tell them what to do. We're trying to give them the advice that can save the life of their child, can save the life of their neighbor's child. And I think that that's the challenge we have right now. We also have to be culturally sensitive. In many ways, the right spokesperson for one population is not going to be the right spokesperson for another population. And who do people trust? That's why I said at the beginning of this answer, I think people like you end up playing very important roles. You know, I've been very involved with a program out of the University of Maryland headed up by Dr. Stephen Thomas, and it's the Black Beauticians and Black Barbers program, where beauticians and barbers throughout many states in the East Coast have been trained on the important public health issues of the day, everything from hypertension, diabetes, you know, cancer screening, to then COVID. And I tell you, they did an amazing job getting the vaccination rates for COVID up in their populations, because you know what? You trust your barber, you trust your beautician, particularly when they have the kind of information at their fingertips that can help you. Mm-hmm. And so for me, it really is about being culturally sensitive and understanding that, you know, the information for one is not going to necessarily be the right information for somebody else. We need to get all the people the right information.
That makes a lot of sense. So does that go hand in hand with what Senator Bernie Sanders is doing, calling for this huge moonshot, a $10 billion investigation into the effects of long COVID? He's looking for help drafting legislation. Yeah. Are you a part of that?
Well, yeah, I'm surely one of the experts, I guess they call, that are providing information. But, I mean, I think to put this into perspective, that sounds like a lot of money. But when you realize that up to 20% of our population today are suffering the impact of long COVID, the economic cost of that is much, much, much larger. So this is one of those ones where basically investing a penny may give you a dollar return. And so we have to do a better job of understanding, why does long COVID occur? Once you get COVID infection, you get that initial infection, you surely start to get better, you don't die, you don't go into the hospital with serious life-threatening symptoms, but you now have these persistent symptoms of fatigue, brain fog, other kinds of aspects of everyday life. And these are so, so difficult to live with. And so it's really important that we understand and address long COVID. And so anybody who says, well, that's a lot of money for that, I'm telling you, it is a great investment, because if we can help bring these people back to a better state of health, they're going to go back to work. They're going to be, you know, basically able to live their lives like they did much more before COVID. And that's really important.
Doctor, my final question, I've never asked you about this before, but with the recent outbreaks in measles being reported in some areas, how concerned should we be about the potential for measles on a local level? And what steps can we take to protect ourselves and our family from this? I know it's highly contagious. My mom told me I had it 3 times when I was a kid.
Yeah. Well, you know, first of all, Freddie, I have to say, you've never asked me a question that didn't have a great reason for being asked ever. So I always anticipate those, okay? And I appreciate them. I appreciate them. I think the issue around measles, again, comes back to that same point that I just made about COVID. You know, there are a lot of people today that say, well, I'm not going to get my kids vaccinated for that. You know, don't tell me to do that. And what we have to help them understand is that measles is a very serious illness. It's highly, highly infectious. And it's one that a number of kids will die when they get it. And today, around the world, measles virus is causing a lot of deaths in kids. Now, why is it a problem here? We have basically been able to keep measles out of the United States largely by having high levels of vaccination, almost like we created a wall. But the problem is there's so much measles around the world right now, and it's coming in and out of this country on traveler, you know, with travelers. And so if you have a pocket of kids not vaccinated somewhere, if all it takes is one match to hit that dry tinder, and poof, away it goes. And we have pockets of under-vaccination here right here in Minneapolis and St. Paul, in the Twin Cities, in the state. And these are kids who, you know, parents who just decided they don't want to get their kids vaccinated. And you can't unring a bell once your kid gets infected with measles and they're critically ill. It's too late to think about the vaccine. So all we can say is no one's trying to run your life for you. We're trying to give you the best advice we possibly can. And that advice is, please get your child vaccinated. The vaccines are safe. The vaccines are highly, highly effective against preventing measles. And measles is a serious disease you don't want to mess with. And so this is a simple, easy way to take that one off the table. We got enough other problems with our kids and our communities and their safety today. This is one we don't have to have. Please help your child be protected.
Thank you for being with us. He's Dr. Michael Osterholm. Let's talk again real soon.
I look forward to it. Thanks, Freddie. You have a good one, okay? Enjoy this warmer weather and this longer days of sun.
Will do. You too, sir. Talk to you soon.
Okay, take care, sir. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.